Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Nun Zayin. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We will start today's shiur from a point that we left off at the end of our previous shiur. In fact, we'll read a couple of lines that we covered already in our previous shiur. This is found at the bottom of Nun Vav Amud Beis. You'll notice one of the features of our marking system are title headings and structural notes that we offer on the outside margin of every new sugya. In this case, we have a Nosei, which is a topic heading, at the lower part of Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis, and we've written, Hiniach Seor Al Gabi Isa Shel Mincha. A person took sourdough. Sourdough is an ingredient that causes dough to ferment and rise. So a person took the seor and put it on the dough, on the batter, or the dough of a mincha. V'nischamso me'aleo. And in a passive fashion, simply by the seor being attached to the dough, so in the course of time, it turned into chometz. So one who placed the seor on the chome, on the mincha, chayav aleo. As we've learned in previous sukkis, there's an iser in allowing or in making a mincha as chometz. HaGemara mekasheres din zeh letzoyle b'shabbos. The Gemara will tie this halacha of placing the dough, the sourdough, on the mincha batter and tie it into a halacha concerning Shabbos, roasting meat on Shabbos. How this works, how it ties in, let us see in the Gemara. So we're going to start four lines from the bottom of Nun Vav Amud Beis. Omar Rabbi Ami, Hiniach Seor Al Gabi Isa. A person took sourdough and placed it on the dough of a mincha. V'holach v'yoshav lo, and he went away. V'nischamso me'eleho, and on its own, the mincha turned into chometz because of its contact with the seor. Chayav aleo kemaisa Shabbos. The person who put the seor on is chayav simply by merely placing the seor on the mincha, as is the case with regard to a melacha of Shabbos, a maisa Shabbos. Specifically, a person who takes some meat and places it on coals, on hot coals. The Gemara asks, "Umaisa Shabbos ki haygavlo mimachayev?" Notice, before we go further, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you have a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line that descends from the kuf. This indicates a long question. This question will continue till the second line from the top of Nun Zayin Omed Aleph. The Gemara asks, is it really so that if someone were to do this parallel act on Shabbos, the act of putting the meat on the coals, that necessarily results in guilt? For Omar, Rabbo, Babarchano, Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, Hiniach Bosar al Gabi Gecholim. If a person placed meat on Shabbos, on coals, Hipech Boichayev, if he flips the meat over so that the fire hits both sides of the meat and thereby gets fully roasted, then Chayev, then he's guilty. Lo Hipech Bo Potter, if he just merely places the meat on the coals, the individual will not be guilty. So you see that the mere placing of the meat on the coals does not result in guilt. So why did you say in the case of the placing of the seor on the mincha that it does result in guilt, just like Shabbos, when in the case of Shabbos, it doesn't result in guilt? Omar Rova, my chayov nami dika Omar. The statement of Rav Ami that said that we're leaving the sor, it results in chiyuv, it results in guilt, like Shabbos. What he means to say, kemaisa tzli shel Shabbos. Let's explain that. The case of chimutz by the mincha is chayav just like a person could be chayav on Shabbos if he flips the meat over. So we might say it like this: the non-flipping over of the saor, the simple placing of the saor, is equal to placing the meat on coals on Shabbos and flipping it over. At this point, the Gemara looks into the issue of tzliya b'Shabbos, of roasting on Shabbos on its own. In other words, not in the context of menachas. It might be pointed out that in learning Torah, especially in learning the Gemara, even though mesichtas carry names to them, which would indicate the content of the mesichta is represented by the title. For example, Masechah Shabbos, you would expect that you'll learn Hilchah Shabbos. The only thing is that as opposed to Shulchan Aruch, when it comes to learning Gemara, the halachas that apply to a particular realm are scattered all through the Shas. So that in order to gain fluency and clarity with original makoros, with primary sources, before one learns halacha, if one wants to, let us say, delve into Hilchas Shabbos, it behooves the individual to learn all of Shas, because very significant sugyas that are relevant to, for example, Hilchas Shabbos, and what we're saying applies to every area of learning. But what applies, for example, to Hilchas Shabbos, you'll find in the most unexpected places. Here, we're learning Seder Kodshim, we're learning Menachos, and lo and behold, there's a small piece of Gemara, but very important when it comes to Hilchas Bishul. So now, we turn to such a sugya. Gufa, Omar Rabba Barbachana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Hiniach Boser Al Gabi Gecholam, one placed meat on coals, and of course we're talking on Shabbos. Hipech Boi Chayov, Lo Hipech Bo Potter. If he flipped the meat over, he will incur guilt of violating Hilchas Shabbos. If he doesn't flip it over, he will remain exempt. Hey Chidomi, what are the circumstances? Before we go further, you'll notice we have a double underline with dots in it, one of our series markings, and in the Mivneh note on the outside margin, Mivneh meaning structural note, you'll notice this represents Shlavei Biwur Lahanal, stages in trying to clarify Lahanal, that which was mentioned just above in our topic note, which had mentioned Hiniach Basar Gabi Chol Shabbos, the issue of placing the meat on coals on Shabbos. So this now involves stages of clarifying what are the circumstances. Mosai chayav. When will one in fact be guilty? So we have the first expression that's underlined, ilema. And of course, when you learn Gemara, you notice that the ilema is a type of suggestion that inevitably will not be accepted. Almost always. There are times that the Gemara comes back to E lemos, but here the Gemara says E lemo di lo hipech boi bei lo boshil, that if we're talking about circumstances that if he doesn't flip it over, the meat simply will not become cooked. Pshita, then it's obvious the that point which was made lo hipech bo poter. What do I need Rabbi Yochanan to tell me something that would is so obvious to us? Ela. Rather, what must be the case? The e lo mahapich bay lo mahapich le nami havi boshil. Maybe we're talking about a case that if he doesn't flip it over, even without the flipping over, it will be prepared. Well, then amai lo chayav. Then why would he say in halacha bays he said lo hipech bo poter? If by not flipping it over, it will get cooked anyway because of the intensity of the heat. So even without flipping over, there should be guilt. Loi tzricha, the halacha of Rabba Baruch Hanan Yochanan is necessary as follows. The e lo hipech bei have boshil mitzad echod kemaichol ben drusoi. If he doesn't flip it over. So only half of the thickness of the meat will get cooked to the extent of Michael ben Drusoi. Michael ben Drusoi is an expression, without getting into the background of it, which is found in Masechah Shabbos, it's an expression that means, according to Rashi, one-third cooked. So Rabbi Baruch Hanan, Rabbi Yochanan was telling us a case where, by not flipping it over, one side of the meat will get one-third cooked. V'chi mahapich bei, And by flipping it over, Boshil Mishnei Tzadim Kemaychel Benjrusoi. By flipping it over, then both sides will get cooked to this extent. They'll become a piece of meat one third cooked. The Komash Malon, and what Rabbi Yochanan is revealing to us is the whole mitzad echod kamaychol ben drusoi, any situation of tzad echod, one third cooked, that one side of the meat merely getting one third cooked, loy chlum hu. As far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned, one is not considered or said to be in violation of Hilchos Shabbos. Of course, when we say not in violation, we're talking strictly on a Torah level. At this point in the Gemara, you see a house marking with around Rava, and also to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you notice a Roman numeral number 1. If you skim down the page, you'll notice a Roman numeral number 2, and in the middle of that line of Gemara, you'll notice V'iko D'Amri is squiggle underline. There are two lishonos in what Rava is about to say. Rava is continuing on this topic, and he will talk about not something one-third cooked, but something completely cooked, a part of the meat that's completely cooked. And he will tell us that if a size or an amount of meat that's equal to a fig, a dried fig, a grogeris, reaches complete cooking, even if it's just that spot, or we'll see a little bit more about that point, if it's a function of one spot or a collection of different spots, that could result in chiyuv. Now, the Gemara. Omar Rava, and of course, we noted before the fact that we have two Lishonos coming up. V'im nitzle boi kegrogeres b'mokoim echod chayav. If the meat that was placed on the coals gets fully cooked, an amount of meat equal to the size of a dried fig, he will be chayav even if he doesn't flip it over. Omar le Ravino le Ravashi. Ravino raises a question. He says, are we to understand Rava b'mokom echod in b'shnayim o shloshim mekoyim aslo, only if the grogeris amount is concentrated in one location, but not if you get a total of a grogeris by collecting different spots, two, three different spots, which would total a grogeris? Are you saying that Rava's limiting the guilt to the case of mokom echod v'hotnan? But we have a Tanaic source dealing with a different malacha, but the common denominator will be the issue of collecting small spots to equal a larger spot. We have a teaching, a Mishnah, in Shabbos that says, HaKodeach Kol Shehu Chayov. Kodeach is an action of making a hole, of drilling a hole. The Mishnah itself says if one drills a hole that is even a kol shehu, one will be chayav guilt. A kol shehu is an indication of something very small in size. Hechidomi. Notice we're going to continue the same marking system, which indicates the stage development. Ilemo, and you see elo lav, and then finally li'oilam. So ilemo, hechidomi, what are the circumstances of this drilling? If we're talking about making a hole, drilling a hole on Shabbos, that's a kol shehu in size in one spot, well, kol shehu l'maychozi, of what value is that? What's it fit for? If you do an action on Shabbos that's of no consequence, then one is not guilty of a Shabbos violation. Elolav b'shnayim o shlosha mekoymos. The chazu letziruf. It must be that he drilled a series of small holes close to each other, as Rashi points out, as carpenters do when they want to create a larger size hole. Sometimes they will make a series of small holes next to each other that eventually can be joined together. So the Mishnah in Shabbos that says Kodea Kol Shulchayav, it must be a reference to a series of these very small holes that eventually could be joined together. So an action like that is consequential. What do we see then? We see that something that's, we see that Shnai Mishloshim Mekoymos does result in Chiyuv. And yet, Rava, according to Ravina's understanding, Rava would have been telling us that Shnai Mishloshim Mekoymos does not result in Chiyuv. You'll notice with our markings, we've emphasized with a dotted underline the expression under Rava's statement of when he mentioned Shnai Mishloshim Mekoymos, in order for us to be able to, let's say, connect the points here, or contrast the points, with what we're learning right now from the case of Kodeach Kolshehu. The Gemara rejects the question and says, Lo, li'oilom b'mokoyim echad. The case of Kodeach Kolshehu is chayav, in fact, in one spot. In other words, a hole of almost of a very small nature, a kol shehu amount of size, and yet there is guilt. So you'll ask, well, of what value is a minor size hole like that? The answer is the chazu lebova daklida. It's fit for. There's another girsa that says lekocha. Kocha is an expression that you find elsewhere, meaning teeth. What's described here is a key that opens locks, and the key, maybe one will consider this a primitive type key from our contemporary standpoint, but the key was made of a piece of wood, and in the piece of wood there were little teeth inserted, little pieces of wood that were inserted into holes into the slit of wood, forming a key. So if you have a good imagination, you could imagine such a key. They may have even been varying size, little twigs or little pieces of wood inserted into the holes to make what would look like a key. But for our purposes, all that's important to note is that a chor kolshu does have value in and of its own, and that's in the case of the preparing of a key. That's what the Gemara calls kocha de aklida, the teeth of the aklida, the key. The ika de amri, another version of Rava, and you'll see is just the opposite of what we just learned. Rava says, with regard to the nitzle boi kigogeres, he says, afilu b'shnayim u'shloshim akomas. Even if it's nitzle, the kigogeres, and the gogeros, the dried olive, the dried fig quantity, is attained by joining up several different spots on the meat. Omale Ravino the Ravashi. Afana nami tnino. Ravino, in this case, as opposed to the first Lashon where Ravino was raising a question, here Ravino offers support to this teaching of Rava. And he says, well, we've learned something like this. Hakodeach kolshehu chayav. One who drills a hole that's a kolshu is guilty on Shabbos. Hechidami, what are the circumstances of this chor, this kodeach kolshu? Ileme b'mokim echad, if it's a singular, minor, minuscular hole, though, so l'may chazi, of what value is it? So it wouldn't be chayav on Shabbos, and yet the Mishnah there teaches it is chayav on Shabbos. Elolav, rather it must be b'shnayim u'shlosha mekoymos. The chazi l'tziruf. We're talking about small holes that were drilled in several different places, and we see that it does result in chiyuv, and that's a function because they can be joined up. Similarly, when dealing with roasting the meat, if the meat is roasted in different spots and all the little spots together would equal a gogeris size, that would also be chayav. So Rava's teaching of shnayim mishloshim mekomos by the roasting that is chayav according to the second lashon is supported by this interpretation of the Mishnah and Shabbos dealing with kodeach. the Gemara rejects the support. Loi. We will not say that the Mishnah in Shabbos with Kodea Kolshu is a support to Rava number 2, Rava's second version, Li'olam B'mokim Echad. The case of the drilling in Shabbos is a hole that's in one spot, a Kolshu hole in one spot. You'll ask, so that, well, what's a Kolshu worth? Of what value is it? The answer is, like we said before, the chazu lebava daklida, a singular hole of a minor size, does have significance when you're dealing with the making, the preparation of a key. Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara opens up with this piece of Gemara, that is, opens up with a Tanaic source. You can see how it appears in a frame, as we do in our Gemara marking system, frame off Tanaic sources so as to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara. Of course, we should point out that we have a slash here indicating that that which follows is no longer associated with the halachas we just dealt with concerning Shabbos. The truth is that this sugya does tie back to what was way before, the issue of chimutz, of making menachas into chometz. So in the outside margin, you'll notice we have a nosei heading. Makuros hamalamdin will have sources here that teach us, sources as far as psukim are concerned, sources that teach us ma nichlal beisur chimutz. What's included in the prohibition of making a mincha into chametz, of allowing it to ferment. We also would like to note that there is a pasuk that the Gemara will be dealing with. The Brisa will cite a pasuk in Vayikra, Perek Beis, pasuk Yud Aleph. Let us read the pasuk. We've included it on the inside margin. Kol hamincha asher takrivu l'Hashem loy se'ose chametz ki kol se'or v'chol dvash Loi saktiru mimenu ishe lashem. Turning to the Gemara, Tonu Rabbanan, ilu nemar, had the pasuk said as follows, in effect dropping the two opening words, if it would have said asher takrivu lashem. This pasuk is, by the way, in the realm of a special of a mincha called the Minchas Marcheshes. The Minchas Marcheshes is one of numerous types of menachas that a handful was taken off and put on the mizbech, and the balance was eaten by the kohanim. That we can call this a mincha hanikmetzes, a mincha that a handful was removed. And two characteristics we want to emphasize in anticipation of the Gemara later on. The Marcheshes was, as we said, part of it is offered on the Mizbeach, and the balance is eaten. There are other kinds of Menachas. For example, there is a Minchas Nesachim. This is a Mincha that is brought along with animal sacrifices. That Mincha, the Minchas Nesachim, is put completely on the fire. None of it is eaten. There's another type of Mincha, for example, the Shnei HaLechem of Shavuos, which is categorized as a type of mincha. None of it is placed on the fire. It's completely eaten. So the Minchas Marcheshes is a mincha that characterizes, in truth, most menachas, where a handful is taken off and placed on the fire, and the shirayim are eaten. The last few comments are made in anticipation of the Gemara later on. So the Braisa is telling us that had the pasuk said asher takrivu l'Hashem loy sa'aseh chometz without the first words kol hamincha, so hoyisi oimer, I would have thought ein li beloy sa'aseh chometz, that there is not included in the prohibition of making chometz elo koimetz bilvad, only the handful. Let's go over this point again. The pasuk said, if the pasuk would have said asher takrivu l'Hashem, that which is offered to the Almighty. When you're dealing with a minchas marcheshes, what part of it is offered to the Almighty? The handful that's removed and taken to the mizbeach, taken to the altar and placed on the fire. So had the pasuk said asher takrivu l'Hashem lo sa'aseh chometz, it would have said, what is the loy sa'aseh chometz, the prohibition of making chometz, applying to? That which is asher takrivu l'Hashem, that which is offered to the Almighty. Hence, only the handful. Mincha minayin, the Braisa goes on to say, what about taking the mincha before the handful is removed, as Rashi explains. The basic mincha, when it's completely intact before the handful is removed. What about that? Is that also prohibited? So Talmud Lomar, mincha. We're now adding one of the words of the pasuk that we did not read before, namely at the beginning of the Braisa, we saw Asher Takrivu Lashem. At this point, we understand that the pasuk doesn't say just that. It also says Mincha Asher Takrivu Lashem. From this, we learn that there's a prohibition of taking your initial mincha with the chometz still in there and making that into chometz. Sha'ar minochos minayin. What about other kinds of mincha? Because this pasuk is in the context of a minchas marcheshes, a special one kind of mincha. What about to include other minochas? Talmud Lomar, kol ha-mincha. Here we're adding these two words that we didn't read before at the beginning of the Braisa. Kol ha-mincha asher takrivu l'Hashem. Especially we see the word kol is coming to include other kinds of minochas as well. Ksheira velo psula. The prohibition of allowing it to turn into chametz is if you're dealing with a mincha that otherwise would have been kosher. That's as opposed to psula, which Rashi explains, if you have a mincha, let us say, that left the azor of the Beis HaMikdash, or a mincha that became tomei, that would not be included in this prohibition. Mikan omru, hamachmitz es haksheira chayav, ves psula poter. From this we derive that if one makes into chometz a mincha that otherwise would have been acceptable, then there is guilt of lo yisase chometz. However, if the mincha was posel, then this prohibition of lo seyase chametz would not apply. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a new geometric form. This is explained in our outside margin under the Mivneh heading. You see what appears to be a crown shape. We have two of them. There's Shnei She'elois Be'inyon Isur Chametz. Shnei She'elois Be'inyon Isur Chametz. Two questions regarding this topic of the prohibition of allowing a mincha to become chometz. The first question, we also have noted a long question marking, and that's indicated by the shin, which is a she'ela, a question, with a vertical descending dashed line, indicating that all of these lines are part or constitute the question, all the lines of the Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line. The style of the question is in the what we call the Aleph Oy Dilma Beis structure, presenting two sides of the question, two sides of the understanding. You'll notice there's an O Dilma expression just a few lines down from here that's squiggle underline. In our marking system, we attempt to squiggle underline those expressions that present alternatives, O Dilma being an example of such. So the Gemara, Boy Rav Papa, Chimtza v'yotzas, v'chozar v'chimtza mahu. Maybe by way of introduction, we should make reference to the Gemara that we learned in our previous shiur. There is a prohibition of mechametz achar mechametz. That means that if at an early stage of the mincha processing, for example, the kneading, the point that the water is added to the flour, one starts kneading the mincha and allows it to sit without any action, it will ferment. Let us say, after it's already become chometz, someone comes along and takes that mincha dough and forms it, which is called aricha, he forms it into the loaf that will constitute the mincha. He also is chayav. In fact, after that, if someone then takes it and puts it in the oven, that's called afiyah, he also would be chayav. All of these people are chayav because they were dealing with a mincha that became chometz. That's called mechametz achar mechametz. In other words, the phenomena that we just described of subsequent individuals being guilty for something that was already chometz, that's called mechametz achar mechametz. Rav Papa, going along those lines, asks, Boy Rav Papa, chimtza, The mincha was allowed to become chometz. The yotzas, then it left the azora, which is the wrong. It's out of bounds as far as a mincha is concerned. The chozar v'chimtza, and then it was brought back into the azora, and someone continued to work on it. Someone else came along and continued to work on the mincha. Mahu, what is the din? And we're asking, what is the din in the context of mechametz achar mechametz? Is this going to apply over here? So, two sides of the question. Aleph, kevon diotzas, since it left after it initially became chometz, ifsilo lo biyotze, it becomes posel under the heading of the psul yotze. Yotze means exiting or leaving. The chihoder mechametz lo, and when it's then brought back in and worked on as chometz, lo mechayev alo mishum mechametz achar mechametz. The din of subsequent guilt for continued chimutz will not apply, because he is doing chimutz to something that became posel. And by the way, we noted above in our brisa that there is no guilt for making chometz a mincha that had become posel. So maybe this is an example of that. Oy dilma, or it could be kevon dechimtza posel. Could be here, since it was initially made into chometz, namely before it became unfit, before it became invalid, it was made into chometz. That's different than the case featured in the Brais above. The case in the Brais above featured something that had already been posel for another reason. For example, it became tome, or it had left early in the game. Then, the Brais that taught us above, there would be no Isur Chometz. Here, that's not the case. Here, it was a valid mincha, and at the point that it was valid, it was made into Chometz. It could be that since it became chometz before it became invalid, then yotze lo mahanibe, then it becomes impervious to other kinds of invalidness, and hence the exiting would not have any effect on it. V'chihodar mechametz lo, and when the next person would come along and do an additional step of preparation, mechayev alo mishum mechametz achar mechametz, there would be in fact guilt of mechametz achar mechametz. Well, that's the question. You just saw two sides of it. Teku. However, there is no resolution. It remains unanswered, as is indicated by the expression teku. Boy, Rav Mori. Even though we don't intend to spoil the fun, we must. We'll tell you ahead of time that Rav Mori's question that we're about to learn also will end with a teku. We haven't used a long question marking here because the length of it isn't so extensive. You'll notice at the last narrow line of the Gemara, the end of the question already appears. Boy, Rav Mori, chimtza beroishoy shel mizbeach mahu. Person took a handful from the korban mincha, from his mincha offering, brought the handful to the top of the mizbeach, and at the top of the mizbeach, he allowed it to turn into chometz. He made it into chometz there. What's the din? Once again, you see the structure of this question is an aleph oy dilma beis structure. So on the one hand, asher takrivu omar rachmana v'ha ikriva. The pasuk that featured the prohibition of making chometz, we had included this pasuk on the inside margin. You can see it above. It said, Kol ha-mincha asher takrivu. You might read that as, any mincha that you will bring up to the altar. Well, in this case, he already brought it up to the altar. That's what the Gemara means when it says, Asher takrivu amar rachmona v'ha ikriva. It has already been brought up. It could be maybe that the pasuk is understood as the prohibition of making the chometz regards only those things that you will in the future will bring to the mizbeach. But in Rav Mori's question, we're talking about the handful that was already brought to the top of the mizbeach, so that the prohibition would not apply. Oy dilma. Or it may be argued that mechusar haktora ke mechusar maisa domi, that as long as the handful hasn't been placed in the fire, it's still lacking maisa, lacking the action. We could say lacking the hakrova. So it still would fall under the prohibition of kol amincha sher takrivu, because you haven't been makrivit in the sense you haven't placed it in the fire yet. And as such, there would be guilt for chimutz b'rosh hashem mizbeach. Teku. This too remains unresolved. The Gemara at this point will refer back to information we had seen above in the Brisa, where we were darshaning the pasuk Kol Hamincha Asher Takrivu. V'hashto denafka mikol hamincha. Now that we have learned that one is chayev even before the kemitza, one is chayev for making into chametz and mincha even before the handful is removed. Asher takrivu lomali. The expression of asher takrivu sounds like you're referring to the kemitz itself. So what does the expression now of asher takrivu, which as we said seems to be kometz, handful related, what is it coming to teach me? The Gemara answers, I need it for the following source, the following information, which will be contained in the following brisa. So we will see very shortly that the expression of asher takrivu, asher is marbe, is coming to include things that I would not have thought on my own. Before going on in the Gemara, let's take a look at our nosei, our topic heading in the outside margin. Me'achar shekosuv mikol hamincha. Me'achar shekosuv kol hamincha. After we've seen already that it's that the pasuk says kol hamincha, which, as we said, includes all of the mincha, not just the koimetz. Ma bo asher takrivu l'rabois be'iser chimutz. What does the expression of asher takrivu going to include under the prohibition of chimutz? We will see a reference to minchas nesachim. This we mentioned earlier. These are meal offerings that accompany animal offerings. And a second point which will be featured, lechem haponim. The lechem haponim is the bread that sat in the heichal, in the enclosed part of the Beis HaMikdash, from week to week, from Shabbos to Shabbos, where it was the new lechem haponim every Shabbos was replaced. We will learn that depending on which shita of Tanoim, we'll see Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva arguing as to what is included by Asher Takrivu. But according to these two Tanoim, we will see something additional added to the Isser of Chimutz. You may ask, well, once you tell me Kol HaMincha, aren't all Menachas included? So as we mentioned earlier, the Pasuk of Kol HaMincha was in the case of the Minchas Marcheshes. And we mentioned the Minchas Marcheshes was characterized by part of it put on the Mizbeach and the balance eaten. A Mincha that doesn't have those characteristics maybe is not included in the first place in that Pasuk. Now, the Gemara. We said that Asher Takrivu is needed L'chidetanya. The Brisa, second line from the bottom, Asher Takrivu. L'rabois minchas nesachim l'chimutz. The Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi Aglili teaches us that the prohibition of allowing mincha to turn into chametz includes the minchas nesachim, the mincha that accompanies korbanos. We also mentioned earlier that this minchas nesachim is placed completely into the fire. Rabbi Kiva Omer, l'rabois lechem haponim l'chimutz. Asher Takrivu tells us that there would be a prohibition if one would allow the lechem haponim to turn into chametz. The lechem aponim, we might note, is under the general heading of minochas. The lechem aponim itself were a series of 12 loaves, two stacks, six and six. All of these loaves were eaten. None of them were placed on the mizbeach. It's true that there was something else that sat on the shulchan, the table, and in the heichal, shnei bozichei levona. These are two containers that held a spice called levona. That spice was placed on the mizbeach, but as far as the mincha part of it itself, the meal offering, the dough, the baked part, none of it was placed on the mizbeach. We have a diamond that appears on the outside margin under our mivneh heading. The diamond is featured. Around the expressions minchas nesachim and on omed beis, you'll see lechem haponim. These are featuring kushios al hodik toni bebraiso legabi shnei dvorim elu. Questions on these two points as were featured in the Braisa. In the Braisa, we mentioned that these two things are that are Shayach Bohem Chimutz, we will bring that into question. So the Gemara asks, Minchas Nisachim? The Minchas Nisachim was a type of mincha that had a large amount of oil that was used in the preparation, large meaning relative to a standard Minchas Nidava. The Minchas Nisachim had a lot of oil accompanying it. Oil comes from olives. We're talking about Shemen Zayas. May Peirois Haim. May Peirois Ein Machmitzim. They are prepared from olive oil, and May Peiros don't cause Chimutz. Water causes Chimutz. But May Peiros, that which is a derivative from fruits, does not cause Chimutz. So if the Minchas Nesachim, as we know, was kneaded with the oil, how could there be Chimutz in the first place? So how can you say that the Asher Takrivu is Marbe Minchas Nesachim as being something that could be that would be subject to the prohibition of Chimutz when Chimutz doesn't even get started in the first place? Omer Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish answers, Omer Hoya Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who was the one to include Minchas Nesachim as being Shaykh to Chimutz, he holds Minchas Nesachim Megablo Bemayim Ukshera. That the Minchas Nesachim in its Megablo, its kneading, it could be kneaded with water. You're allowed to add water to the kneading, and the water, the presence of the water, could cause Chimutz. And hence, Asher Takrivu, according to Rabbi Yosef Lili, is Marbe Minchas Nesachim as being coming under the prohibition of allowing it to become Chometz. If you'll ask, how could it become Chometz? The answer is because, according to Rabbi Yosef Lili, you're allowed to add water to it. Now we turn to the other Mincha, the Lechem Aponim, which Rabbi Akiva had said is included. So to this we also ask a question. Lechem Haponim, Midas Yovesh Hi. The Lechem Haponim was brought or was measured in a kli called an Isaron. That's a Midas Yovesh. It's a measuring vessel that contains an Isaron, is a quantity of flour. So the Lechem Haponim, Midas Yovesh Hi. V'shamano lei l'Rebbe Akiva, and we know that Shitas Rebbe Akiva is the Omar Midas Yovesh loy niskatsha. The Midas Yovesh, these dry measures, were never sanctified. If they were never sanctified, and sanctification was a function of them being smeared or anointed with Shemen Hamishcha. Rebbe Akiva says the Midas HaYovesh was not sanctified. Now, if it was not sanctified, so then the Isser of Chimutz would not be applicable. The prohibition of Chimutz applies to something that has become sanctified as a mincha. But if you'll tell me, like we're saying right now, according to Rabbi Akiva, the Midas HaYovesh was never sanctified, so then there's no grounds for the Isser Chimutz setting in on the Lechem Aponim. That's a big problem. As a result of this, Sholach Rovin Mishmeid Rabbi Yochanan. Kachi Hatzo'o Shel Mishnah. Meaning, the contents of the Tanaic source that we learned, that Asher Takrivu is Marbe, on the one hand, according to one opinion, Lechem Aponim, according to another opinion, the Minchas Nesachim, all that is accurate. However, the Epoch, we have to switch around the Shitas, the names, who is associated with what, and hence read as follows. We've included this in a frame as we do Tanaic sources because the Gemara is presenting what we now have in a frame as the more accurate version of the Braisa, and with this reading we should not encounter any problems. So it starts, Asher Takrivu, L'rabois Lechem Haponim L'chimutz, Divrei Rabbi Yosef Aglili. Instead of Rabbi Yossi Aglili including, as we said before, Minchas Nesachim, no. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, Ashir Takrivu is Marba the Lechem upon him. Now, you'll ask, well, what about the fact that the Midas Hayovesh wasn't Niskacha? He doesn't say that. He holds the Midas Hayovesh was Niskacha. That's going to be Shitas Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And as a result of the Midas Hayovesh, the measuring vessel for that was used in preparing the Lechem Aponim, since it was sanctified, so the Isur Chimutz can in fact set in on the Lechem Aponim. Rabbi Akiva Omer L'Rabbois Minchas Nesachim L'Chimutz. Rabbi Akiva will tell you that Asher Takrivu says that Minchas Nesachim is included in the prohibition of Chimutz. At this point, the Gemara embarks on a mission to parallel Rabbi Yossi Aglili with Rabbi Yoshia. This is a function of the Gemara noting that Rabbi Yochanan's rereading of this source, he mentioned that we should switch around the original source as we just got finished doing. Rabbi Yochanan, in doing this, is consistent with his own approach to these Tanoim. Let's glance at the outside margin under our No Say heading. Acharei Rabbi Yochanan ma'amid Rabbi Yossi Aglili kadeo shesoveres d'shayach chimutz b'lechem upon him. After we saw Rabbi Yochanan set up or establish Rabbi Yossi Aglili as the holding that chimutz is shayach to the lechem upon him, Alma, we therefore conclude kli yovesh niskadesh, the vessels used for dry measure were sanctified. So after that's done, HaGemora Oimeres, the Gemara will point out, Rabbi Yochanan hu l'shitaso. Rabbi Yochanan is consistent with his own opinion, with his own approach. The Omar, Rabbi Yochanan has been known to say, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yoshia Amru, Davar Echad. Rabbi Yochanan has been known to say, when he analyzed different Tanaic opinions, he has been known to say that Rabbi Yossi Aglili parallels Rabbi Yoshia. For Rabbi Yoshia Omar, we know that Rabbi Yoshia holds the kli yavesh niskachu b'fnim, that the interior of dry vessels, the interior of those dry vessels was smeared with the Shemen HaMishcha, thereby causing their interiors to be sanctified and hence sanctify that which is placed within. So, saying this over again, repeating this, Rabbi Yochanan, point one is that Rabbi Yochanan switched around the Tanaic source, leaving us understanding that Rabbi Yossi Aglili will be of the opinion that Midos Hayovesh are sanctified. A second point, Rabbi Yochanan has been known to parallel Rabbi Yossi Aglili with Rabbi Yoshia. And Rabbi Yoshia is known to hold that Midos Hayovesh are sanctified. So if Rabbi Yochanan parallels Rabbi Yossi Aglili with Rabbi Yoshia, then it makes a lot of sense that Rabbi Yossi Aglili will be the opinion that holds that Lechem Aponim are subject to the Isur of Chimutz, because the Lechem Aponim were measured in dry vessels, in vessels of dry measures, which were sanctified. As we said before, if a vessel had not been sanctified, so there would be no prohibition of chimutz on that which was placed in them. Now, we turn to the Gemara. We should note also, we have a long point marking. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you will notice a nun that's encircled with a descending vertical line, indicating that all of the lines of the Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line constitute the point. The Gemara. V'ozda Rabbi Yochanan l'tamei. Rabbi Yochanan, who set up Rabbi Yossi Aglili with regard to the Lechem Haponim, from which we conclude that he holds that Midas Yovesh is Niskacha, he, Rabbi Yochanan, is consistent with what he said elsewhere. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the echod mitalmidei Rabbi Shmuel amru davar echod. Rabbi Yossi Aglili and one of Rabbi Shmuel's students say the same thing, or of the same opinion. Umanu, who is that student of Rabbi Yishmael? Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yishmael had many students. Amongst them were Rabbi Yoshia. We'll see a little later a reference to a Rabbi Yonasan. But Rabbi Yoshia is of the same opinion as Rabbi Yosi HaGlili. Well, what does Rabbi Yoshia hold? The Sanya. We have a Tanaic source that features a pasuk that deals with the clay mizbeach. The clay mizbeach, vessels used in offering things to the mizbeach, we will classify them as clay lach, vessels used for liquids, for example, blood. It says regarding the clay mizbeach, which were clay kalim of lach or kalim lachim. Vayim shechem, they were anointed and thereby became sanctified. The word oisam is a word that indicates some type of minimizing or limitation or exclusion. Namely, these were sanctified as opposed to something else. So as we go on in this source, we'll notice we've underlined key names, Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan. Each one of them will present their understanding of the pasuk, namely, something was sanctified, something else not. Rabbi Yoshia Omer, Midas Halach, we've also scribbled online references here to Midas Halach, and the next line you can see Midas HaYavesh. We'll continue this marking with Rabbi Yonasan as well, squiggle underlining these two kinds of vessels. So Rabbi Yoshia says, Midas Halach, Nimshach, was anointed, Bein mibifnim, bein mibachutz. The interior, the bifnim, and their exterior. Midas yavesh, nimshachu mibifnim, v'ein nimshachu mibachutz. The dry measures were sanctified from within, and that's of central importance for our sugya. Hence we've dashed underlined this nimshachu mibifnim. V'ein nimshachu mibachutz, but they were not sanctified from the outside. Rabbi Yonasan, at this moment we can de-emphasize him, and we've done that with our markings. We've emphasized the Rabbi Yoshia opinion of Nimshichu Mibifnim. It's really this is the reason the Braisa was brought in, to show us that Rabbi Yoshia holds that Amidas HaYovesh was sanctified. And hence, he will parallel Rabbi Yosi HaGlili, the way Rabbi Yochanan set things up, enabling the Lechem Aponim to become subject to Chimutz, being that the Lechem Aponim was also had been exposed to a dry vessel, dry measure. Continuing now in the Braisa, Rabbi Yonasan has a different approach to understanding the Pasuk of Vayim Shechem V'Kedesh Oisam. He says, Midas Halach Nimshechu Mibifnim V'Ein Nimshechu Mibachutz. He, you'll notice, is one notch lower than Rabbi Yoshia's approach. Whereas Rabbi Yoshia said the Midas Halach was anointed from within and without, Rabbi Yonasan, one notch down, says the Midas Halach was anointed only from within and not from without. Midos Yavesh Lo Nimshechu Kol Iker. The dry measures were not anointed whatsoever. Teda Lecha. And let it be known, or you should realize this, that they were not anointed. Sharei ein mekachos. They are incapable of creating sanctity. Dechtiv, the posuk, will show this point. It says, Mimoshvoisechem toviu lechem tenufa shtayim shnei esroinim soiles tieno chometz teofeno bikurim lashem. This is a reference to the Shtei Alechem, which were brought on Shavuos. The Pasuk indicates that they are chometz. They are baked as chometz. Emosai hein Lashem. The end of the Pasuk had said, Bikurim Lashem. When is something Lashem? La'achar shine'efu. Only after it was baked does it become sanctified. What does that show? It shows that the vessels that the Shtei Alechem were subjected to beforehand, namely Midos Yavesh, dry measures, did not impose any sanctity on the Shtei Alechem. Only after their baking did they gain sanctity. B'mai komifligi. What is the point of controversy between Rabbi Yonason and Rabbi Yoshia? Answer, be'oisam, concerning the word oisam. Rabbi Yoshia savar oisam equals limute midas yovesh mibachutz. As we mentioned earlier, the word oisam was an exclusionary expression. The pasuk had spoken about liquid measure vessels, and it said they were sanctified, they to the exclusion of something else. So Rabbi Yoshi says, limute midas yavesh bachutz. It's to the exclusion of the dry vessels, which were not sanctified from their exteriors. Rabbi Yoshi, just if we remind ourselves, held that when it came to the midas halach, they were sanctified from within and without. And the pasuk is saying, only they were sanctified from within and without. The dry measures are sanctified only from within. Hence the word osam excludes the dry measures with regard to their exterior sanctification. Rabbi Yonason Savar, Midas Yavesh Chol Hu V'lo Itzterich Krolimuti. Rabbi Yonason holds that dry measures were non-holy vessels in the first place, and therefore they don't need a pasuk to exclude them. They're, as far as Rabbi Yonason is concerned, they're not in the ballpark. They're in a different realm altogether. Ki Itzterich Krol, under what circumstances do I need a pasuk? Do I need a scriptural reference to exclude something? That's limute midas lach mibachutz, to exclude the liquid measure from being sanctified from without. So that as far as Rabbi Yonason is concerned, the oisam serves as a limitation with regard to the exterior of liquid measures. The Gemara now raises a question based on what was said earlier. We had seen in the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan made a comment that Rabbi Yossi Aglili and one of Rabbi Shmuel's students named Rabbi Yoshia are of the same opinion. Could not the same type of statement been made paralleling Rabbi Akiva with Rabbi Yonason? Before learning the Gemara inside, Rabbi Yochanan presented Rabbi Akiva above as holding that Asher Takrivu, which was in the context of the Isser Chimutz, applied to the Minchas Nesachim. Rabbi Akiva was not willing to say that Asher Takrivu would include the Lechem Haponim for the Isser Chimutz. So why would Rabbi Akiva say that? It must be that it's not Shayech Chimutz with regard to the Lechem Haponim, and that is a function of the Lechem Haponim having been subjected only to dry measures. So that as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, being that he did not include Lechem upon him in the Isser Chimutz, it must be that Rabbi Akiva holds that dry measures were not sanctified. Is it not so that Rabbi Yonason said exactly the same thing, that dry measures were not sanctified? So if Rabbi Yochanan is interested in paralleling opinions, and he did so between Rabbi Yossi Haglili and Rabbi Yoshia, could he not have done the same thing between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yonason? Let's now read this inside. Leimo Nami, let Rabbi Yochanan have similarly said, Rabbi Akiva, who we saw above, we have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text to help you find where this reference to Rabbi Akiva is. That was Rabbi Akiva that was marbe the Minchas Nesachim and not the Lechem Haponim. Let us say that Rabbi Akiva, the Echod mitamidei Rabbi Shmuel Omru Dovar Echod Umanu Rabbi Yonason. Rabbi Akiva, who was marbe the Minchas Nesachim and not the Lechem Haponim, says just like Reb Yonason, both of them holding that Midas HaYovesh were not sanctified. So the Gemara says, you know why that was not said? Why Rabbi Yochanan didn't parallel them? Mishum delo shavu b'midas lach lahadodi. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yonasan are not alike when it comes to their opinion on the midas halach. We've been emphasizing the midas hayovesh, but when it comes to the midas halach, they differ. And how is that? Rabbi Akiva will hold that midas halach was kadosh from the outside as well, as opposed to Rabbi Yonasan, who said that the midas halach was sanctified only from within. Omale Rav Popo Labaye. Veho iko biso delach hu. Was there not a vessel that was used for the kneading? Why was it said above? And we have a little arrow that you'll notice to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. If you align this with that which was said above, it points to a line at the end of the Brisa, in which it spoke about the Shtei Alechem, and it said, when does it become sanctified? It becomes sanctified only after the baking. Hey, but wasn't the Shtei Alechem kneaded in a vessel? And the kneading vessel is considered was a vessel that's a kli lach, and as such, as a kli lach, it had kedusha capability. So why was it said that there was no sanctification until after afiyah? Omar le, so Abaye answers, kegoin shelosh al gabi katavlaya. The kneading took place not within a bisa, this kli lach, but the kneading took place on a piece of leather. And the piece of leather, the katavlaya, is not called a service vessel. It's not called kli shores, and hence it will not impart any sanctification. Ihochi, if this is the way you explain things, well, a similar type approach could have been taken as follows. Above, Rabbi Yonasan was trying to make his point against Rabbi Yoshia, and he said the following. We have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can parallel this with the star above, and you'll see where this quote is coming from. Rabbi Yonasan has said to Rabbi Yoshia above, Teida loch. It should be clear to you that the Midas Hayovesh was not sanctified. Sharei eino mekadeshes. The Midas Hayovesh does not impart sanctity. By virtue of the fact that it does not impart sanctity, obviously it wasn't anointed. It wasn't nimshach. So Rabbi Yonasan was making his point that the Midas Hayovesh were not nimshach by the fact that it wasn't mekadesh. Well, le mole, couldn't Rabbi Yoshia have said back to Rabbi Yonasan as follows, that in general, the Midas Hayovesh are sanctified. If you'll ask about, what about the Shtei Alechem, that only after their baking did they only then gain sanctity? I'll tell you, Kagon de Kaila Bisar in the Choyl. Kaila means measured. That's talking about a case. The Pasuk was talking about a case where the Shtei Alechem were measured using a non-sanctified dry measuring device. The Kaila measured the Isar on the whole. In other words, just like Rabbi Yonasan made his point to Rabbi Yoshia, citing a contingency case, they needed it on a piece of leather. But that's a contingency case. Couldn't Rabbi Yoshia have said back to Rabbi Yonasan, you're not making any strong point from the fact that the sanctification took place later, only after the baking, indicating that the initial measuring kli could not impart sanctity because it wasn't anointed. I will tell you, says Rabbi Yoshia, that the Midos Hayovesh were sanctified. as far as the case referred to in the Pasuk, they simply measured the Shtei Alechem in a mundane, in a chul vessel. The Gemara answers why Rabbi Yoshua could not have argued like that. Hochi hashta. How can you compare the way we responded regarding the Katavlaya to this? Bishlama bisa, with regard to vessels that are used for kneading. Loi oma rachmono, there is no command in the Torah, the levid bisa lemei lashbei, that you shall make a bisa for kneading. Therefore, ki losh lo agabi katavlayo leslon ba. If they choose to use a piece of leather for kneading, that wouldn't bother us at all. It would be fine. By using the piece of leather for kneading, you're not doing something that's against any Torah teaching or against any spirit of the Torah. Eloi soroin. However, when it comes to the measuring vessel, the dry measuring vessel, Kevon the Amarachmona Ovidi Soron Vekayobe. The Torah says, makes a reference to the Isoron. It says in the Pasuk, Visoron Soles. So we see that the Torah addresses such a vessel. It makes mention of a dry measuring vessel by name, calling it the Isoron. So the Torah expects me to make an Isoron and use it for measuring. So, Shavik Isoron de Kodesh, the Kail Bisoron de Chol. Would you think that they would not use the holy Isoron and use a mundane Isoron? Impossible. So the Pasuk is working with the valid assumption that they used the Beis HaMikdash Isaron. They didn't use some kind of mundane common Isaron. They would have used the Beis HaMikdash Isaron. Ah, so then why does the Pasuk say that sanctification takes place only after the baking? The answer is because that Beis HaMikdash Isaron was never sanctified with the Shemen HaMishcha. So it never absorbed sanctity. And that was, in fact, Rabbi Yoshia's proof. Tanu Rabbanan. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading in the outside margin. Kol shemimenu liishim harei hu b'val taktiru. We will learn shortly, based on a posuk in Vayikra Perek Beis Posuk Yud Aleph, which you can see is quoted in the Gemara itself within the Tanaic source that we're about to learn. There the posuk says, ki chol sor v'chol dvash lo saktiru mimenu ishev Hashem. And it's pointed out the word mimenu is an extra expression. It could have simply said chol dvash lo sak, kol sor v'chol dvash lo saktiru ishev Hashem. What's the mimenu word doing? So from this, there is a well-known drosha that says as follows: sacrifices from which a part is offered to the Almighty, is offered on the Mizbeach, is placed ishe, the fire, placed in the fire, sacrifices from which the part destined to the fire was placed in the fire, the balance that remains after the designated part was offered, the balance is forbidden to place in the fire, is forbidden to offer on the Mizbeach. Later, the Gemara will ask, what about bringing the balance onto the ramp leading to the Mizbeach? But for right now, we want to emphasize this point, that the drosha we will be dealing with is those parts of sacrifices that remain after the part that's offered to the Mizbeach, the balance, the remainder, is forbidden to be offered on the altar, on the Mizbeach. Tanu Rabbanan. Minayin, from where do I know? Lemale mi besar chatos. From the meat of a chatos. There's a long list of things in this particular brisa, but just to focus for a moment on the first example, the besar chatos is the meat of the chatos after the blood was sprinkled. Now, the blood was sprinkled on the Mizbeach. That which remains is called the balance. the sprinkling of the blood on the Mizbeach is that which was offered to Hashem. It's true that with regard to the korbanos, there's also the chelev that's placed on the Mizbeach as well. It might just be noted that the chelev, if it for some reason gets lost, is not binding with regard to the korban itself. But we do know that if the chelev is around, then it must be offered. That's the part that's offered to the Mizbeach, or to the Almighty on the Mizbeach. What we're talking about now is the balance that remains that's eaten. So here we're asking, from where do you know that if one is male, puts on the Mizbeach, mi besar chatos, umi besar osham, umi besar kotshe kotshim, umi kotshim kalim. Kotshe kotshim, Rashi points out, is a reference to the kivsei atzeres, which were public shlomim offerings. Because after you mention chatos and osham, we already know those are the primary examples of the standard kotshe kotshim. So what else could be included in kotshe kotshim? So it's pointed out, as we just mentioned in the name of Rashi, that this is the kivsei atzeres. And kotshim kalim, other kinds of kotshim kalim, like a standard korban shlomim, a personal korban shlomim. What else? Umi moisar ha'oimer, the balance of the korban oimer, which is a type of meal offering brought on the 16th of Nisan. The mosar, this is the shirayim of the omer, after the handful was offered. Umi moisar shtei alechem, umi lechem aponim. The Gemara will deal with these expressions later. Umi shiore minachos, the shirayim of a mincha, after the handful of a standard mincha is offered. What about the balance, the shirayim? Shehu belosaset. From where do I know that putting any of these items on the Mizbeach, there is a violation of a negative command? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, Ki chol se'or v'chol devash lo yisak tiru mimenu ishel Hashem. We darshan, kol shehu mimenu li'ishim, anything from which there was already placed in the fire, as is supposed to be done. So anything that remains after that which was placed in the fire, hare hu babal tiktiru, the balance is under the prohibition. Babal means the negative, not the isr, do not, taktiru, do not offer up. In this source, there was a reference to the shtei alechem and alechem upon him. We have a little double star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. If you have any trouble finding where this issue is coming from, you can see just a few lines up the reference to the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim. Let's think about this. Shtei Alechem were two loaves that were brought on Shavuos together with the Kivsei Atzeres. The Lechem Aponim, those are the 12 loaves that sat in the Heichal from week to week. In other words, they were changed week after week. This drasha talks about things from which a part is placed on the fire. Now let's ask ourselves, what part of the Shtei Alechem is placed in the fire? What part of the Lechem Aponim is placed in the fire? None of it. You have 12 loaves. The 12 loaves were divided amongst the Kohanim. The Shtei Alechem were divided amongst the Kohanim. There was no part of them placed in the fire. So why are they included in this source which features things from which part was placed in the fire? So the Gemara asks, "V'shtei alechem v'lechem aponim yesh mehen la'ishim, is part of them offered into the fire?" V'hotanya, we have a Tanaic source. This Tanaic source deals with an unrelated topic of hagosha, of bringing a meal offering to the corner of the Mizbeach. And this source, which is found in the Afsamach Omid Beis later on, it says, Yotsu shtei alechem v'lechem aponim she'ein mehem li'ishim. The din of hagosha does not apply to the shtei alechem, nor to the lechem aponim, which are clearly described as ein mehem li'ishim. No part of them is offered into the fire. So we see here very clearly that shtei alechem and lechem aponim is not part. It shouldn't be included in the source above, which speaks about things that were offered, part of which were offered to the fire. The Gemara answers in a very brief, very terse way, but Rashi elaborates a bit more. Amar Rav Sheshes, Ein Migufo Le'ishim. As far as the din of Hagosha, of bringing a meal offering, a mincha, to the corner of the Mizbeach, That halacha applies only to menachos from which the mincha itself, from the substance of the mincha itself, something was put into the fire. So it's true that the lechem aponim and the shtei lechem, none of the substance itself of the constituting the shtei lechem nor the lechem aponim were placed in the fire. Hence, there's no din hagosha by those. However, the shtei halechem come together with the kivsei atzeres. If we can view it for our purposes as a singular unit. So when talking about the shtei alechem, a part of that offering, the part that is the part, the animal part of it, there was a sprinkling of the blood. There was the chelev, the innards of that of those animals were placed in the fire. So the kol shimimenu leishim harim b'balkutiru does apply to the shtei alechem. What part of the shtei alechem, you'll ask, was placed in the fire? We'll tell you, that which came along with the shtei halechem, the kivsei atzeres, part of that was placed in the fire. With regard to the lechem aponim, we mentioned this earlier, the lechem aponim were 12 loaves that sat on the shulchan of the in the heichal. There were two receptacles, two bozichin. These were receptacles that held lavona. Lavona was a spice that was offered every Shabbos when the lechem haponim were changed and distributed amongst the Kohanim. The bozichin, there were these the bozichin containing levona were offered into the fire. It's true that the bozichin contained the spice levona, which is not part of the substance of the lechem haponim itself, but they were part of the lechem haponim requirement, and as such, the pasuk that says, or the drasha we said, kol shehu mimenu leishim, the lechem upon him had the levona placed in the fire. The lechem upon him then is viewed as the balance that remains, and hence it's forbidden to place the lechem upon him into the fire because the bozichin were placed in the fire, and the lechem upon him is the balance that remains. The Gemara goes on with a similar topic. At this point, though, we're dealing with not bringing these things that were mentioned above onto the Mizbeach proper, but onto the ramp leading up to the Mizbeach. The ramp was called the Kevesh. And this is what we featured in our Nosei, in our topic heading in the outside margin. Dvorim she'asurim lahaloisam al-gabi ha-Mizbeach. Those items that are forbidden to be placed on the Mizbeach. Mahu la'loisam al-gabi ha-kevesh. What is the din with regard to their being placed on the ramp leading up to the Mizbeach? Itmar, the Gemara now. Hamale mikulam. One who brings any one of the items mentioned before that are prohibited to be brought on the Mizbeach. One is male mikulam al-gabi ha-kevesh. One who brings any of them onto the ramp. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayav, Rabbi Lozer Amar Potter. Rabbi Yochanan said that one would be Chayav, as if he put it on the top of the Mizbeach. And Rabbi Lozer says he's exempt. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayav, Desanya, he cites the following Tanaic source. This source opens with a word, HaMizbeach, coming from the Posuk in Vayikra Beis, Posuk Yud Beis. You'll notice on the inside margin, it says, the pasuk is quoted, Korban reishis takrivu oisam lashem vel hamizbeach lo yalu lereach nichoyach. It's also very important to note that this pasuk is pasuk yud beis. We had taken note of a pasuk in this context, pasuk yud aleph, on daf nun zayin omad aleph, when we were referring to the Kol HaMincha Shir Takrivu LaShem Pasuk, so that this is in the same context of the Pasuk there indicating the prohibition of placing on the Mizbeach certain items. Here, this too is in the same context. So the Braisa says, HaMizbeach, Ein Li'el HaMizbeach. I see that the items that we mentioned before as being prohibited, they're prohibited as far as being placed on the Mizbeach proper. Kevesh minayin, what about placing them on the ramp? Tamad lomar, v'el ha-Mizbeach lo yalu l'rotzoin. So from this extra expression, if you will, we learn from this, as Rashi says, Ve'al mezbech lo yalu desomich lelo saktiru mimenu ishe. We already learned that one is not allowed to offer those things to the offer them onto the fire. And here it seems, after already telling me lo saktiru, you say Ve'al hamezbech lo yalu, which would seem to be including something else. And hence, we're including the ramp. Rebbe Lazar Omar Potter, my time off. Notice with our squiggle underlines, we featured just before Rabbi Yochanan Bar Chayav and his basis. And now, with the squiggle underline, Rebbe Lazar Omar Potter, my time off. What's his basis? The Omar Kra, the Pasuk says, and we're going back now, citing from Pasuk Yud Aleph, and we'll lead into Pasuk Yud Beis. Saor Udvash Korban Reishis Takrivu Oisam. Osam, as we've mentioned on previous occasions, is a limitation expression or an exclusionary term. Oisam hu de Ravi Loch Kevesh Kemizbeach. Osam is the Shtei Alechem and the Bikurim. The Sor and Dvash, Sor is sourdough. That's a reference to the Shtei Alechem, which were prepared as Chometz. Sor being a term used at times interchangeable with chometz, that's the shtei alechem. Dvash is a reference to the bikurim. Dvash, technically speaking, is a reference to dates, but the bikurim, which were the first fruits brought that were brought on Shavuos time and presented to the kohen, that's dvash. We are Rabbi Elazar says that oisam the shtei alechem and the bikurim who the ravi loch kevesh kemizbeach. With regard to those items, and only those two items, do we include the ramp like the top of the altar itself. Aval midi achrino lo, but other items on the entire list that we had before are not included in this parallel of paralleling the kevesh to the mizbeach. And hence, if you bring, let's say, the meat of a chatos or venoshim, etc., according to Rav Elazar, and place it on the ramp, one will not be in violation. At the top of Nun Ches Amar Aleph, Rabbi Yochanan, hai oisam my ovid lei, what does Rabbi Yochanan do with this exclusionary expression? Rabbi Yochanan himself was including many items. So what does he do with this oisam? Answer, mi boy alei lichadisanyo. He needs it for the following teaching, the teaching that will be revealed in the following brisa. But as far as our shiur for today is concerned, it's sufficient to simply say that Rabbi Yochanan has as his alternative use for the word osam, and hence his response to Rabbi Lozer. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.